Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
We need all the talent that we can get. Linguistic skills is obviously a prime candidate, but equally the cultural understanding, the sophistication of how we interpret the world. There's a whole range of different things that cultural and linguistic literacy offers you.
You're listening to the National Security Podcast, the show that brings you expert analysis, insights, and opinion on the national security challenges facing Australia and the Indo-Pacific. Produced by the ANU National Security College.
Welcome to the National Security Podcast. I'm Meg Tapia.
And I'm Olivia Shen. Today's podcast is being recorded on the lands of the Ngunnawal and Ngambri people, and we pay our respects to their elders, past and present.
And today we're joined by Carl Chang, First Assistant Director General for the Office of National Intelligence and called Champion. Welcome, Carl.
Thanks, Meg. Very happy to be here, and thanks, Olivia.
It's good to have you. So in this episode, coinciding with Harmony Week, we're introducing a new mini-series. Olivia and I are going to be exploring cultural and linguistic diversity in national security. We're going to be asking some probing questions about the role of diversity in promoting strategic advantage. And we're going to discuss with our guests, including you, Carl, the critical importance of cultural and linguistic diversity in building a strong national security outlook. So, Carl, you are called Champion for the Office of National Intelligence. What does that mean?
Well, at ONI, we have a cold network that was established in 2020. It aims to promote greater cultural linguistic diversity within ONI as an office. We want to create greater awareness of these issues around cultural and linguistic diversity in the workplace, and with a view to helping the organisation better take advantage, better position it to do that. And thirdly, we kind of want to collaborate with other agencies in our national intelligence community to really strengthen and promote the community as an employer of choice for people from cold backgrounds.
So all of that is really great. And I think we've heard all the lines and the statistics about how cultural diversity and diversity general really promotes innovation and creativity. It enhances an organization's problem solving. It's really good for morale and retention and for the workforce to feel included. But for me, cultural diversity in national security matters because where Australia fits in the world and our engagement with it, we can't be in a cultural vacuum, right? So we exist in the world. And so it makes sense to me, because that world is diverse, that we would want to hire as many people from culturally and linguistically diverse backgrounds to help us navigate that world. Is that what you do in ONI and in that community?
Yeah, well, I think in ONI, we do a number of different things. One of the key things that we do is we provide the Prime Minister and senior ministers with understanding and insights to inform strategic decision making. And fundamentally, that obviously is about understanding how the world works, understanding what is happening around the world, and to really be able to do our business. And that goes, I think, more broadly for the agencies across the intelligence community, that we need to have people who can work with people from around the world, who understand people who have different perspectives and backgrounds.
Yeah, so I'm first-generation Australian. I migrated here as a child, and I've described my cultural and linguistic diversity and my heritage as my superpower because it's what allowed me to kind of navigate different worlds at the same time as a kid, and so I've grown up in that way. So I can imagine there's lots of people out there who are thinking, well, if I've migrated to Australia, would I be welcome in the national intelligence community?
Well, I can answer that question very directly because I also migrated to Australia here as a kid and I'm working in the intelligence community now. So I think the answer is yes, you can. Obviously, there are security requirements around how you get a security clearance and all that stuff. But I mean, I would still say absolutely, if you've got that as interest and aspiration, then you should definitely look at that. And to a certain degree, as we have more people from different backgrounds here, you know, the organizations themselves need to adapt and think about how we bring people from different backgrounds in and resolve, you know, how we look at some of those issues.
I would just add that I'm in furious agreement with the both of you as a first-generation Australian migrant from China myself. It's interesting, Meg, though, you said that your migrant background you see as a superpower. Mm. And I'm not sure if I've ever felt that way about it, to be honest, to be perfectly frank. And Carl made a point about finding a home in the national security community, no matter your background, if you have the aspiration and the interest. To be honest, I never imagined myself working in national security policy. Growing up, you know, my mother wanted me to be a dentist. Thanks, Mum. She's super disappointed, as most tiger mums are. Honestly, I've now worked in the national security community for more than 10 years, and it's the most incredible privilege. It's the most incredible privilege to be in a space where we're solving wicked problems that contribute to our nation and contribute to the prosperity and security of our people and our society and our communities. But I would never have imagined finding a home in the national security community when I was 14, 15, 16, being pressured to do dentistry at uni. But the reason I'm here on this podcast is far more self-interested. I want people to find a home here the way that I found a home. I want to model what it can be to have a career in the national security community, but look different and maybe sound different and bring this cultural baggage with both the good parts and the bad parts, and just, I guess, be the change that I think I want to see in the community.
I love that. And I think the message there for me is around belonging and the importance of creating an environment in which people actually belong as opposed to fit in.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's what that's that sense of home, right?
I like your use of the word family because that's how I feel too. I feel like the national security community and this domain is my family. It's where I belong. It's my home. I recognize that I don't look as different. I come from a Latin American background. I am Latino. Latina, my name is not really Meg, surprise. And my name is actually Margarita. And so it's been a little bit easier for me because when people look at me, I think there's a more welcoming sense of belonging for me.
Yeah.
But I do feel different. I do feel like I did grow up in a different world. I did grow up in a different way. And I call it my superpower because it meant that I had to learn a new language on the playground. I had no choice but to immerse myself in the Australian culture and in the Australian language because I needed to get by. But it also meant I learned how to read people's nonverbal cues, which has been a real asset coming into this community. And it's opened my eyes to the value of different cultures and that difference is actually quite valuable. So, Carl, I want to ask you, what's been your experience in the community?
I've been working in national security for quite a while. I found it a very positive experience. So I guess in that sense I'm going to say I've had a great experience. I found it very supportive and very enjoyable and challenging, like all the sort of things that you would want in a career, right, things that actually inspire you and challenge you and test you. I will say, I think for the intelligence community as a whole, I mean, it has done a lot, particularly over the last 20 years, I think, to acknowledge issues, particularly around gender. Like, I think it's taken really great steps, and there's been a lot of great work done by a lot of people, particularly on gender diversity. And I think now is the right opportunity to really look at cultural and linguistic diversity. I think there's definitely a vibe, if you like, and definitely a sense of interest and change. So whether that's about having the right opportunities, whether that's about seeing yourself in leadership, kind of celebrating culture or dealing with everyday racism, those sorts of issues, people aren't yet really as comfortable about talking about those things. And therefore, you know, we've still got a bit more work to do to make that more of a norm within our organizations. And I think to kind of better connect, particularly if you're talking about employment value propositions and things like that, connect the community, its staff, and with the broader Australian community sentiment on these sorts of issues.
Yeah, so you can't be what you can't see is the old adage, right?
Absolutely.
So how do you do that personally as the cold champion? Do people come to you and say, hey, Carl, I'm having a bit of an issue. How do I navigate this? Is it more strategic where you're trying to change the conversation? What do you do on a day-to-day basis to support that conversation from happening?
Yeah, great question. Look, I got involved when we were setting up our networks in 2020. A staff member came to me and said, what are we doing about cultural linguistic diversity? So I took it on. And for me, the priorities are a couple of different ones. One is around our own organisation and promoting that cultural awareness and understanding. Having, I guess, a place where people can go to voice issues, particularly if they're not comfortable in their own management chain for any particular reason. But also, I think, how do we bring those issues and work on them constructively in the organisation to bring around organisational change, and how do we embed that in our organisations? And the last thing for me is this sort of dialogue. And I really want to thank the college for working on this series. I think having this broader dialogue around the issues, challenges and opportunities faced by national security community, by the national intelligence community, on really engaging, recruiting and retaining a workforce from different backgrounds is really critical. And that for me, and being part of this, is actually how we actually bring that cultural change around, and hopefully not as long as it's taken gender diversity.
Well, I think it's one thing we always talk about is that the public service, we're at large, should be more representative of the public that we serve. And the statistics bear that out, that our public service isn't as diverse as it could be. And narrowing that even further to the national security community or the national intelligence community, there is clearly a long way to go there. We have a country where more than 50% of the population have at least one foreign or overseas born parent, or are themselves born overseas. And you just don't see that same kind of diversity around Canberra or in the meetings that we go to or in the forums that we participate in.
Yeah, I think especially up in the leadership levels, you certainly don't see that kind of diversity. We're getting better at gender diversity, but we're not so good at the cultural linguistic diversity in the top echelons of the organisations. And speaking of which, I mean, Paul Simon, who's the former Director General of ACES, he made a public statement in May last year for the 70th anniversary, and I had the privilege of being there. And in that speech, he spoke a little bit about diversity, and he spoke about why a diverse workforce is so important. And he spoke about the importance in terms of solving complex problems, the need for imagination and curiosity and invention and discovery, particularly in his organisation, which is a high-risk, complex, operational organisation. How do we cultivate that next generation? How do we encourage people to join the national security community, to join these different agencies, and then hopefully rise through the ranks? And how long do you think it's going to take?
I don't know how long it's going to take, but we need to better identify barriers to cultural and linguistic diversity come in, as well as progression for those already in. We need better data. We need to make that data available, and then we can look at targeted measures to remove these barriers, including better outreach to underrepresented groups, to promote inclusive practices in recruitment, recognition, retention and representation, addressing bias, including in leadership skill. Identifying pathways, mentoring, I think, also to sort of mid-level and senior positions, including better support from managers, training and upskilling where needed. And I think, importantly, we need senior support for changing the narrative, normalising the dialogue and changing the status quo. And as Lua was saying earlier, being able to see yourself and being able to understand. And I think this is true more generally, that when you talk about a career in national security or in national intelligence, there is a gamut of stuff that you can do. And it isn't necessarily the case that, I have to be a particular way or have a particular skill set means that this is what I'm suited to. And I think that dialogue and that message, as well as people from different backgrounds being able to see themselves, is really important. So if you wanted to be, an accountant, an engineer, a software engineer, there's a whole range of different skills, and there's a place for you in the national intelligence community to do that work and contribute to the nation's prosperity and security. So, I think it's really a better understanding what those opportunities are, and being able to tap into people who otherwise wouldn't think of this career path for them.
Yeah, I certainly didn't think of this career path. And what's been wonderful to see now that I'm actually in the National Security College is to see, I guess, almost the growth of the sector, right? Like what you would traditionally think of as a national security or policy or national intelligence agency role is expanding and expanding as our geostrategic environment becomes more complex, as we have more need for synthesis and integration across the public, across not even just the public sector, but the private sector, with business, with community. And all of these skills fundamentally requires this collaborative mindset. It requires appreciating difference, appreciating contestability, and actually embracing it and welcoming it. And for people who live and breathe contestability and diversity, obviously we want these people in our corner. Obviously, we value the contribution that they can make to that project of nationhood. Sorry, now I start to sound like a freaking infomercial or something.
I think you're totally right, 100%. And what I love about what you're saying is that you're so passionate about it, right? You're just, it's so important. And I think everything that you're saying is truly, truly important. But it's got to be founded, or it's got to be grounded in facts. So you spoke a little bit before about the stats, the statistics. I've got a few more stats. So the top five most common languages, according to the Australian Bureau of Statistics, other than English in 2021, are number one is Mandarin, number two is Arabic, number three is Vietnamese, and number four is Cantonese. Surely we need people in our national security community, given everything that's happening in the geopolitical landscape and with our intelligence agencies, that speak these languages.
Absolutely. We need all the talent that we can get. Linguistic skills is obviously a prime candidate, but equally the cultural understanding, the sophistication of how we interpret the world. There's a whole range of different things that cultural and linguistic diversity offers you. You aren't an instant expert just because you happen to come from a different background, but by goodness, we actually need those skills desperately too at the same time. I will say one other thing is that I think particularly for us, I mean, we're also seeing within the community a greater move for sort of these networks of people starting to form in terms of cultural and linguistic diversity. And I think really it's small, it's nascent, but within our organisations that is starting to happen. And what we need to do is bring them together and harness that power to basically, you know, look forward into how our organisations will adapt for the future.
Yeah, the linguistic diversity is absolutely really critical, and it's actually really hard to recruit for as well. Now, Meg, you mentioned earlier that your name is not actually Meg.
That's right.
And my name is not actually Olivia.
No way.
No way. My name is Shen Mengqian in Mandarin, or San Mengqian in Cantonese. So I was born in Guangzhou, and I came to Australia at the age of six. And I'm going to ask a question that I've been asked throughout my life in Australia. Carl, what's your real name and where are you really from?
My real name is Carl Chang, but actually my real name is Zhang Jingzhi. So that's my real name in Chinese, Mandarin speaker, or Zhang Jingzhi in Cantonese. My wife would be appalled at the way I just pronounced that. and I was born in Taipei. And my parents grew up in Shanghai and Tianjin.
We'll be right back.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
In this disrupted world, Australia needs security professionals more than ever. Join the next generation studying at the ANU National Security College. Our programs uniquely fuse academic knowledge with practitioner experience and fit around your lifestyle with study offered online and on campus. Follow the link in the show notes for more information about programs and scholarships. The ANU National Security College. Engaging minds for a secure Australia.
Meg, we've talked about this before, but we both have some really poignant stories about learning English. Do you want to tell yours?
Yeah, so I learned English on the school playground. I did not go to the ESL language classes like my sisters, and there were no Spanish speakers in my school. So I got paired with the Portuguese kids and the school went, yeah, that's good enough. I went, okay, yeah, that'll do. So that's how I learned to speak English. And my sisters would come home and coming from ESL, they'd always sing songs and they'd always put on the Beatles album because it was, you know, nice and easy and good tunes. And so that's how I learned to speak English, this what you're hearing now. My Spanish is not that great. It's stuck in 1986, the year that I moved to Australia. I try to practice every now and then, but it's not fantastic.
Yeah, I had quite a different experience learning English. I did go to ESL class and I actually pretended to be dumb for a little while longer so I could stay in ESL class. So I just pretended to be dumb for like two extra like terms, and, but pretend that I couldn't grasp English and people were genuinely worried. But that being said, I actually learned it really fast and I still remember so vividly the moment that English clicked for me. And actually that to me was the superpower. Being able to communicate broke me out of my shell, and that was when I discovered the superpower.
So I migrated when I was about five, but that was a while ago. I don't remember going to any ESL classes. I remember going to local primary school and the local kindy, and that was it. So somewhere in that path, learning happened. But what I do remember, and my mother likes to tell this story, which is basically I'd come home, which she'd have a chat with me about how my day was. And I'd say, apparently I said to her, what did the teacher say to you today? And she said, and I said, no, Carl, no. And said, what does that mean?
That's a beautiful story. But it also goes to show how society in Australia has moved on as well, right? Like when I was in ESL class, I was one of three Chinese kids in there, and this was in a very, very white primary school in North Shore of Sydney. I struggle to think of a single school in the greater Western Sydney, greater Sydney basin that has only three Chinese or non-white kids in it.
Yeah. Well, it is interesting too because when I came to Australia, most of the Chinese Australians in Australia were Cantonese speakers and I'd come from a Mandarin-speaking environment. So actually for me growing up, it was a bit strange because I was kind of a little bit out of both worlds. I wasn't a Cantonese speaker. I didn't speak Cantonese, didn't really hang out with people who spoke Cantonese. There were no other kids who spoke Mandarin, so I had to find my place with Greeks and Italians and other kids from different backgrounds.
Yeah, I think that's not our stories are not dissimilar, right? And they're pretty typical, I think, of the norm of what it feels like for migrant kids when they come here, having to kind of find their place. And you asked the question, where are you really from? It's funny, I consider myself first and foremost Australian, and I don't often get asked that question, but certainly my heritage has had a strong influence and a strong bearing on the way that I look at the world. So I guess I'm very proud to be able to straddle both of those worlds. So, Carl, Olivia and I have spoken about how we became interested in national security, but we haven't heard your story, and I'm curious to know what drew you in the first place.
Well, I guess challenge, actually. Like one of the things about national security and the work that we do is it's so different to everything else, right? And it's kind of unique because there's really only one place you can kind of do it in Australia, you know. So that was really what drew me in, and I think partly also largely to challenge myself because as I said, coming from the the background, kind of usually a very quiet kind of guy. And so being able to put yourself into where you are not comfortable, I think is actually really, really important. And doing something that's different and that is challenging is really the attraction and always has been the attraction for me.
Yeah. Thank you, Carl. Thank you for coming in today.
And it's a pleasure.
Thank you for being a champion for people like Olivia and I.
Thank you very much. And thanks for this podcast. It's been great.
So that's a wrap for our first podcast in this mini series. We hope you'll stay tuned for our other upcoming podcasts. This will be a short series of six where we sort of unpack the challenges and the opportunities for cold people in the national security community. We obviously welcome your feedback. We welcome your stories. We welcome particularly your experiences of being part of the community that we'd love for you to share with us. So look forward to your feedback. If you have any comments or suggestions for future episodes, you can contact us at natsecpod, that's natsecpod at anu.edu.au.
And until next time, thanks for listening.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.